And welcome back to Senior Edition on AM 83 WNYC in New York. When we were setting up today's shows and we saw that it was Valentine's Day, we immediately said, okay, call Abe Lass and let's have him come by because we know that he'll do something wonderful for Valentine's Day. And today he has surpassed himself, perhaps. Abe, welcome back to Senior Edition. Yeah.
It's great to be here, Lenny, and after that introduction, I almost can't wait to hear what I'm going to do.
Well, I think that in this case, you, by bringing a special guest and yes. and what I know about your plans for this, I think that we're really in for a treat.
We're not going to keep the audience too much in suspense, are we?
No.
But this is a special day, and it deserves a special guest. And I could, of course, you know, break the suspense immediately and tell you who the special guest is.
I think most of the audience has already guessed.
Well, I don't think so. But whether they've guessed it or not, I'd like to introduce her with this very special song, which, as I say, judging from my, you know, past experiences, I am not going to sing. I'm going to try to say, but I will play it. And I think practically everybody who's listening knows what the song is. And then immediately following the song, I shall drag out of hiding our special guest. All right,
okay.
I'm going to move over to the piano and just take me about a jiffy.
Just about a jiffy, in fact. And he is rushing over to the piano. He's already seated at the piano.
Oh, now, Lenny.
Huh.
And
that's how quick
the jiffy's
is.
Over. And the song, of course, is Who Stole My Heart Away, Who Makes Me Dream All Day Dreams I Know Never Be True. Seems as though I'll ever be blue. Who means my happiness? Who would I answer yes? Well, you might guess. Who? No one but you.
Bravo.
It may not be well sung, but,
no, but
it came
you give
from the heart.
You give recitative a whole new meaning.
Oh, yes, I know that. It's not so good, but it's new. And, of course, the mystery guest and the who is none other than my, as was it Earl Wilson used to say, my beautiful wife.
By B.W.
My wife, Sylvia. Sylvia?
Sylvia, welcome to Senior Edition. This is the first time you're on the radio?
No, it's not quite the first. I was on radio about 35 years ago when I was on with on the show Buddy Rogers, Pick a Date with Buddy Rogers.
Ah, no, that tells you.
For Valentine's Day.
But I wanted to thank you, Lenny, and thank you, Abe, for that musical introduction. It has really helped me a lot because all my life people have asked me, who is Sylvia? And now I think I know. First of all, Sylvia is the mystery woman. She's the one who stole Abe's heart away. And she is now Abe's lass.
Ah, that's not bad.
That's pretty good.
For a beginner in radio, that's not at all bad, I'd say.
Well, it sounded professional, in fact.
I thought it was a wonderful way to introduce somebody for a Valentine's Day program, because you know that the traditional way of signing a Valentine's Day card is not with your name, but with the question, guess who? And so here I am.
Here you are, and we don't have to guess who anymore, Sylvia.
But
today, as everybody knows by now, is St. Valentine's Day. And Lenny, I think it might be appropriate just for a second to do a little bit of history. Everybody, some people don't know what St. Valentine's Day is about, except that you get chocolates and hearts.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, to the best of my knowledge, and I hope that later on we're going to open the phones, are we, later?
If we have the time.
And somebody, I hope, usually do. Yeah, we generally do. Somebody, I hope, will correct my historical facts. To the best of my knowledge, St. Valentine was an actual person. He was a priest. And he was beheaded by the order of Claudius the Goth in 270, 3rd century A.D. He was a Roman martyr. is now considered the patron saint of lovers.
Wait, Claudius the Goth, that suggests that he wasn't a Roman emperor of the usual sort, that he was actually from...
Well, don't get me mixed up in Roman history now. I mean, this is about as far as I can go, Lenny. The Goths, you remember, at one time overran all of Europe when the Roman kingdom was...
They were one of the Germanic tribes.
Exactly.
In fact, the Gothic cathedrals were named Gothic by some critic who considered that they were barbarian-looking.
I remember when I was studying Latin in high school, we spoke about the Goths and the Visigoths. Mm-hmm. I never could tell the difference. They all looked the same in Latin, so it didn't make very much difference. But I want to come back to St. Valentine. Somehow or other, this martyred, beheaded priest has become, in the popular mind, the patron saint of lovers and of some assistance to those unhappily in love. Shrouded in the mist of history, although I suppose that the Hallmark people could help us out on this, nobody knows exactly when people started sending these greetings. I have at home these lovely lacy greetings that go back to the Civil War They antedate the Civil War. So somewhere in the 1830s and 1840s, people were still sending them here in America. But I don't really know. And just one other fact about this holiday, which is somewhat suggestive, and that is that it is probably, someone has suggested, it is probably the survival of a pagan festival associated with love.
Lupercalia.
I suppose so. I'm not sure about that. But I know the birds were supposed to be coming here on February 14th, and obviously doing a lot of mating, which is what birds do in the main. I think it was Cole Porter who spoke about that, didn't he? The birds do it. At any rate, that's so much for saying.
Birds do it, bees do it. Let's celebrate Lupercalia.
Yes,
right?
Let's celebrate them, and that's how we get here.
Wouldn't it be interesting, Abe, if we could trace the use of Valentine's Day cards in literature? We could go all the way back and find perhaps the first mention of it in poems and novels.
I looked it up in the dictionary.
And it said
it was interesting. It said, and this is in the American Heritage Dictionary, it said, a satirical or sentimental card. Now, it said satirical first, and I know there have been a lot of people who are upset by the way some Valentine's Day cards are turning out these days. You know, in the old days, everything was warm and friendly. But
well,
it turns out that they were always satirical. Is that true?
The only instance of it that I can remember from literature is in the novel Far From the Madding Crowd, when Bathsheba very mischievously sends a Valentine's Day card to Boldwood, in which she puts down, "Marry me." That excites him.
Mm-hmm. It would excite anybody, Sylvia. Let's not get that.
Well, it ends. It ends tragically for him.
But that's Thomas Hardy, and that's the end of the 19th century?
Yes, the end of the 19th century, because he lived until 1936, but he wrote that book in the late 19th century.
Right, he wrote most of his novels in the 19th century and then wrote poetry for the rest of his life.
Yes.
He should have stuck to the novels, some of us think.
Well, as a matter of fact,
he was wonderful in both.
We're not going to, I don't know whether we're going to read any of his poetry, but he is an extraordinary poet, not as much read as he ought to be. Sylvia and I were talking before we came here about why we were invited here, why Sylvia and I were invited. And why, for example, not Dr. Ruth, the sex specialist or sex maniac or whatever. And it would seem more appropriate. We thought that this would be just the right place, the right time to invite Dr. Ruth.
But it isn't at all.
It never crossed our minds.
It never did? Mm-hmm. Well, Sylvia had an explanation.
Hey, but isn't it at all appropriate? I mean, Dr. Ruth just writes about the mechanics of sex, and that's not what Valentine's Day is all about. Valentine's Day, I think, is about romantic love. And you may wonder why we were chosen, because we don't seem to be at an age where people that people associate with romantic love.
Yeah, I was about to.
But why not?
Do you remember what Hamlet said to his mother? At your age, the hectic in the blood is tame. Yeah. And of course, what did he know? He didn't know a thing. As a matter of fact, it seems to grow in middle age, certainly. But
his mother wasn't all that old. She had to be in her late thirties, early forties, right?
Of course, in Hamlet's eyes, you know, anybody. To the younger person, the older person always seems much, much older.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really know how much older his mother was, but...
Well, if he was 32...
He was 32. She must have been at least,
But don't older people also reinforce that kind of prejudice? How many times have I heard people say, oh, I'm too old for that sort of thing, or, you know, my husband and I don't think in those terms anymore. As you get older, the passions kind of die.
I'd like you to tell me more about that, Lenny, about the ebbing of the passions.
I think love is timeless and ageless, especially romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
Romantic love is a kind of longing, isn't it? A desire for the beloved. It's a yearning to be with that person. And I think that never dies. But you can feel that. You can feel that when you're 15, and when you're 50, and when you're 70.
But I think W. Somerset Maugham, now, since we're all quoting people, once said something to the effect of, "The kind of love that lasts longest is the one that's not reciprocated."
No, that's not true.
Well, I think we
hope to prove by the end of this day, by the end of this program, Lenny, that. Unrequited love is really not good for it's not good for your health, to put it mildly. It may be good for poetry, but it's really not good. I've been lucky in my life to have had my affections somewhat returned in kind.
Requited.
Requited, yes. And I know fellows, you know, people commit suicide over unrequited love. So nothing to be. Maybe it was okay for Somerset Maugham, not okay for me.
Abe, I think also that maybe we're the right ones, because after all, we're still honeymooners. We've been married for only 4 months, and after all, you have to expect
and this is our fifth
romantic passion to be still alive. I think that I have a poem that I'd like to read. It was written by Edward Dyer, and it begins, "The lowest trees have tops." In this poem, I think he expresses the idea that love is not the exclusive property of any one age or any one class, not the exclusive property of the educated who can articulate their love. It's really a wonderful poem. Dyer lived in the 16th century, and I think it's a universal poem. I'm quite sure it holds for today as well as it did then. He says, "The lowest trees have tops, the ant her gall, the fly her spleen, the little spark his heat, the slender hairs cast shadows, though but small, and bees have stings, although they be not great. Seas have their source, and so have shallow springs, and love is love, in beggars and in kings. Where waters smoothest run, there deepest are the fords. The dial stirs, yet none perceives it move. The firmest faith is found in fewest words. The turtles do not sing, and yet they love. True hearts have ears and eyes, no tongues to speak. They hear and see and sigh, and then they break."
Sylvia, I think it sort of underscores the universality of the all different kinds of passion, but it's great poetry in its own way, and yet sometimes we forget that these universal sentiments are expressed by people who are not great poets, and I have one here. I deliberately took it out because I am sure that the words were written by almost a non-poet. And I'd like you to comment on it, Sylvia.
You're going to play?
Yeah, I'm going to play this on the piano because it's an old song and it's a very, very familiar one. It's a song of the 20s, 1923. And the title of it is I Love You. I mean, and what more direct way of saying it than I love you? Now, Dyer, of course, has said it too, has said it in a million different ways. And I'm going to play it. I doubt that I'm going to sing it because I have made a public vow not to do this, but if I can resist it.
No, but you talk in key,
yeah,
which is almost the same. Yeah. That's why I said recitative. I wasn't trying to make a pun about the first part of that.
You don't spell it with a W either,
right.
You know?
Exactly.
I couldn't resist that, Lenny. So I'm just going to play this. I'm going to try to recite the words. And Sylvia, if you want to make some sort of comment about the universality and the passion.
You mean afterwards?
Yeah, after. Yes.
Well, while he walks to the piano, we have gotten a number of calls from people who didn't get the name of the poem or the poet.
The name of the poem is The Lowest Trees Have Tops. And it was written by Edward Dyer, mm-hmm. whose dates are 1543 to 1607.
So he actually
He's an Elizabethan.
Yes, he actually predates Shakespeare a bit, doesn't he?
Well, Shakespeare died in 1616. Shakespeare's dates are 1564 to 1616, so they really overlap.
Contemporaries.
Yes.
Okay, Lenny?
Yeah.
I love you. I love you. That's all that I can say. I love you. I love the same old words I'm saying in the same old way. I love you. I love you. Three words that are divine. And now, my dear, I'm waiting to hear the words that make you.
Before you tell us, and we will hear Sylvia's take on I Love You right after this when Senior Edition returns.
Hello, this is Garrison Keillor inviting you to join us every Sunday at noon for a Prairie Home Companion right here on WNYC 830, the Good Neighbor Station to Greater New York.
This is Senior Edition on WNYC AM 83. And before we go back to Leonard Lopate and his lovely guests, we'd like to remind you that WNYC's programming is made possible in part by contributions from our listeners and corporate and foundation members, including Freeport, Mac Moran Incorporated. And now let's go back to Leonard Lopate, Abe Lass, and beautiful Sylvia.
Or we could say Sylvia and Abe Lass, or... We whatever way we want to say it, the newlyweds are here, and and we're talking appropriately about love on Valentine's Day.
By the way, I feel pretty sure that this is a unique experience for all of us. I don't think that there are two newlyweds like us anywhere in America sitting around.
Don't tell your age.
Comfortably talking with a nice guy like you and a great woman like Katie and Terry and talking about love in this particular way, playing it as well.
On this station at this particular
time. or any place
that limits
else.
It.
Well, Sylvia, do you want to say something about I love you?
You know, Abe, if you were a woman and you loved a man And he came to you and he said, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you very much. I really love you. Yeah. I mean, you would be delighted. It would be just great. But I think it raises the question of who loves the deepest and the most. How do you know when somebody loves you? And is it because, does it mean that when a person is very eloquent and can put his feelings into wonderful words, that he loves you more than the stammering husband who says, I love you, I love you, I love you? I don't think we can make come to that conclusion. But I do think that women love language. They love words. They love to be told, I love you, in rhetorical, beautiful language.
Is this autobiographical?
Yes, it goes for me.
Which is the plot of Cyrano de Bergerac, for example.
Exactly. I wanted very much to read two scenes from Cyrano, one with Roxane and Christian, and one with Roxane and Cyrano.
And I didn't know you were going to do that.
No, but I'm not going to do that, because Abe advised me not to do that. But we might just say a few words about it, because it's so apropos. Cyrano has been standing in for Christian, because Cyrano, of course, is the great poet. He is in love with Roxane. So is Christian in love with Roxane. But Christian is a soldier and he has no words. He does not know how to express his love. He would be the one who would sing your song, I love you, I love you, I love you. But at one time during the play, Christian is fed up with Cyrano's hold over him. So he decides to speak for himself. And we have a scene in the play where Roxane waits for him to express his love, and he says, I love you. She says, well, that's good. That's a beginning. Go on. He says, I love you. Well, embroider a little bit, she says. And he says, I love you very much. Oh, she says. She becomes impatient with him. And she says, what else? He says, No, I don't love you. Ah, she says, leaning back, that's better. I mean, she's beginning to feel some controversy here. He says, I adore you. And impatiently, she gets up and slams the door, goes inside and slams the door. And then there is a companion scene with Cyrano, in which we hear the marvelous poetry of Rostand as Cyrano expresses his love in sincere and yet eloquent language. It is magnificent
poetry. But Sylvia,
are you
saying that just a simple expression of love is not good enough, and that all of us have to become great poets, or even make a stab at something that we might not do very well?
No, of course.
Aren't there other ways of doing it?
Of course.
Singing that song and bringing a lot of flowers instead of writing a good poem and bringing maybe one flower?
Well, when we're at home and we're sitting in the living room and Dave's sitting at the piano and he plays all these love songs and looks at me, I think that's quite sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't change that for Shakespeare. even though that leads me to a poem by Shakespeare that I wouldn't have minded receiving
since
a Valentine's Day.
But since nobody knows whether Shakespeare really wrote those poems, or at least three or four people are arguing the point, at least you got the genuine article here. You know that he's a blast.
That's right. I wish I. Sylvia wishes that she could receive this as a Valentine, and I very much wish that I could have written this and have sent it to Sylvia.
We all wish we could write like Shakespeare.
Well, we were playing a game, you know. Abe and I were playing a game, and we asked ourselves, well, if you could receive a Valentine from anybody, which one, you know, would you choose? And I think this is a pretty good selection. It's by Shakespeare, and it's one of his sonnets. It starts.
You generally can't go wrong with Shakespeare.
No.
Still number one.
Yes.
Yeah. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fear from fear sometime declines by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe, or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee. And he meant, of course, this poem. And, of course, the poem did give life to her. Who would know? Well, the strange thing is, of course, that it wasn't a her. We think of this as a love song sent to a woman. But as we all know Shakespeare's life, it was sent to the Earl of Southampton when he was a young boy.
And I withdraw. I withdraw that, Sylvia. I don't have anybody else to send it to. I wonder why.
I want people to know who they're listening to if they tuned in late. My guests are Sylvia and Abe Lass, who have been married 4 months now. Abe, of course, has been on the show many times. This is the first time that Sylvia has. But I hope that it won't be the last, or it'll be the beginning of many, many visits. You don't have to wait until...
wait to be invited.
The last time Sylvia was on the radio was in 19...
Well, 35
years ago. So you're not going to wait another 35 years to come on Senior Edition.
Oh, I hope not. I haven't got that time.
And this is Senior Edition on WNYC in New York, AM83.
Another all-time favorite. I'm sure it's not only mine and Sylvia's and yours. And I can't think of a better time to read it than... St. Valentine's Day. Sylvia?
I think this is a favorite with almost everybody, and very appropriate for Valentine's Day. It was written by Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
And probably the poem that most people think of when they think of Valentine's
Day. Yes, I think so. And, of course, it's one of the sonnets from the Portuguese. She says, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach, when feeling out of sight for the ends of being and ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need, by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely, as men strive for right. I love thee purely, as they turn from praise. I love thee with a passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death." I think everybody knows the wonderful love story about Elizabeth Barrett Browning and the poet Robert Browning, how she was ailing, she was sickly all her life. She sat in a wheelchair, she wore in a chaise, and she was dominated by a terribly tyrannical father.
Played by Henry Hull, always.
Kept her at home. And then Robert Browning read her poems. She was better known than Robert Browning at the time. He read her poems and fell in love with her through her poems and came to the house and swept her off her feet and out of that autocratic father's home, and they went on to have this magnificent love affair. But what bothers me so much about that story, and I wish I hadn't learned it, is that after Elizabeth Barrett died, Browning married again.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, that's great.
Why we have at least some people, I think, have the ability to love more than once. The problem is that some of them try to love more than once at the
same time.
They
yes,
love
yeah.
If you do it consecutively, it's just fine.
Well, it's different, obviously. While Sylvia was reading this really magnificent poem, no matter if you don't read it too often, if it comes upon you, say like by once every year or two, it's a very, very, very gripping poem.
It still resists becoming a cliche
because
it's so good.
Yeah. It becomes a cliche probably only in the opening line. Mm-hmm. You know, "How do I love thee?" People who don't know what it says say, "Oh yeah, I know that poem." And while Sylvia was reading it, it occurred to me, to come back to a point that we made before, that great sentiments like, you know, the depth of one's love are very often expressed by minor poets or people who are not poets, and combined with music, they have a very special impact. And I'm going to play, and I'm going to be very, very hard-pressed not to sing Irving Berlin's How Deep Is the Ocean.
Oh, I want you to sing
yeah.
it. And by the way, that he may not be a poet, but Irving Berlin sure writes good lyrics.
He is very, very, very close to being a poet. And I
we
hope
have three or four in the century who
are
songwriters.
I hope we'll get to talk about the relationship. We may get the relationship between poetry and music, and combined a little later, we're going to try to indicate how they reinforce each other. But this one, I'd like to play at this point, just as a sort of contrast to Elizabeth Barrett Browning's "How Do I Love Thee," because the theme is so much the same.
And also, while you go to the piano, let me invite listeners who would like to get into this conversation to call us here at 267-WNYC. That's area code 212-267-WNYC. Abe Blass is now seated. Glass is now seated at the grand piano here in our sumptuous studios. Is this piano better than the other one we used to have, Abe?
Well, it's a Yamaha, and I've never played on a Yamaha, and so I really don't know. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. I like the sound.
It does. How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times a day do I think of you? How many roses are sprinkled with the dew? How far would I travel to be where you are? How far is the journey from here to a star? And if I ever lost you, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? Bing Crosby, I'm not.
You're not. That was a beautiful song and beautiful lyrics. I think it went very well with How Do I Love Thee.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that is easier to understand. I mean, do you think that the music, if the music is really beautiful, can deepen a simpler message?
I think it does, because it deepens the emotion. I think of all the arts, music is the most emotional. And when you combine music and lyrics, you ought to have something wonderful. We have some instances of that. But the trouble is that most modern lyrics, for example, to the songs that are being sung today, don't hold up by themselves. I mean, if you get any of these rock and roll songs, you can't say the lyrics. And even when you get some of the folk people today, the lyrics don't hold up.
Sylvia, just on this point, and I hope we'll come back to this combination of poetry and music to see how they heighten each other. I'd like to sing. Excuse me.
Abe, can I take a call? We have a number of calls coming in. I want to take this call first because I think it'll please you. And then we will go to a break and we will come back with Abe at the piano. But first, Lester from Long Island. Hi, you're on Senior Edition.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling. I feel constrained to call because I'm the fellow that introduced Sylvia and Abe.
Congratulations.
And they are a very romantic couple. Much more romantic even though they sound very romantic, they really are the most beautiful and romantic couple that I know. That it's a match made in heaven.
And you're the person who made that match.
That's
yes.
right, and they know that. And one other thing that we're doing in their honor on Valentine's Day, including this phone call, the message I have is that my other half has learned to tie a bow tie in honor of Abe. She tied one today, and she's wearing it right now.
We should point out that Abe Lass is always seen with a bow tie on.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever... Can you remember the last time you wore a traditional tie, Abe?
Yes. Yeah. About 1944.
Wow.
That's a long time. Lester... thanks for this.
I want to thank you too, Lester.
Wonderful. It's a wonderful program.
And I thank you as well, Lester.
Break a leg.
Yes.
In my case, I take people too literally. Abe, we are going to take a short break, and we'll be back with you at the piano, and then more telephone calls, more poetry, and a total tribute to Valentine's Day with the Lasses.
That was a real...
I'm Bob Edwards, and I'm Eric Zorro.
Every weekday, we bring you Morning Edition, with reports from NPR correspondents across the nation and around the world.
With local news, weather, traffic, and transit reports.
Arts, education, sports.
Features, city council reports.
And the most comprehensive morning news magazine on radio.
Join us weekday mornings to 11:30 for Morning Edition.
On WNYC AM 83, New York Public Radio.
This is Senior Edition on AM 83 WNYC. We are talking about Valentine's Day and ways of expressing love with Abe and Sylvia Lass. And wow, that was incredible that we got that call from the man who introduced him. Now, they told me during the break that introduction was simply on business terms, and he was not being a matchmaker,
he's
right? Lester was not being...
No.
Okay, well, we want to make that clear. That doesn't mean that love didn't bloom and that they won't be eternally grateful to Lester. And we'll be taking calls later. But right now, Abe, you said that you had another song you wanted to play.
Yeah, just song. We've talked about Shakespeare and how Shakespeare talks about love incomparably. And this great, great sonnet of Elizabeth Barrett Browning, How Do I Love Thee? And... I'd like to add a sort of contemporary note. It's 1928. It's a popular song, and I'm going to have great difficulty with this, trying to refrain from singing it. I can't give you anything but love, and baby,
I'll take it.
The only thing that I've got plenty of, baby, dream a wild, scheme a wild. You're sure to find happiness, and I guess all those things you've always find. For I'd like to see you looking swell, baby, diamond rings and... No, I'll come back later. Till the lucky day you know done well, baby, I can't give you anything but...
Abe, I noticed you faulted on the diamond ring.
Yes.
Well, Woolworth doesn't sell diamond rings still, but they do sell cubic zirconia, Abe.
Well, I just want to come back to that immortal line. It says, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby.
Shakespeare's not.
No, diamond bracelets Woolworth doesn't sell, baby. I got so caught up in this that I tripped up on those lines. Oh, please forgive me.
Quite all right.
What do you think, Sylvia?
I wanted to read a poem by E. Cummings, who is, of course, a modern, 20th century poet. We mustn't think that love poems were written only in the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. Love poems are still being written today. They are different in their technique. They use more modern language, and they are not as flowery in the traditional sense. Sometimes they don't rhyme at all, but they are really beautiful, and they express the same passion of love and the same romantic fervor that the traditional poets did. This poem, and I really wish I could have received this poem, is called Somewhere I Have Never Traveled. E. Cummings wrote it for his wife. He says, "Somewhere I have never traveled, gladly beyond any experience, your eyes have their silence. In your most frail gesture are things which enclose me, or which I cannot touch because they are too near. Your slightest look easily will unclose me, though I have closed myself as fingers. You open always, petal by petal, myself, as spring opens, touching skillfully, mysteriously, her first rose. Or if your wish be to close me, I and my life will shut very beautifully, suddenly, as when the heart of this flower imagines the snow carefully everywhere descending. Nothing which we are to perceive in this world equals the power of your intense fragility, whose texture compels me with the color of its countries, rendering death and forever with each breathing. I do not know what it is about you that closes and opens. Only something in me understands the voice of your eyes is deeper than all roses. Nobody, not even the rain, has such small hands." I love that poem. I love the poem because of what it tells us about his wife and what it tells us about the relationship between Cummings and his wife, and the way he felt about her. In talking about how she opens him and closes him, how she has that kind of power over his whole being, such a fragile woman has this marvelous, intense power over him, and it's a gentle power, and it's wielded in a gentle fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Very beautiful, I think, expression of mature love.
Leonard, Sylvia and I have been talking about, we have mentioned before, the combination of poetry and music, and maybe we can close this segment of ours by doing two very, very famous poems and very famous songs.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Jonson's "Drink to Me Only with Thine Eyes," and which is an Elizabethan 16th century, and "Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms" by Thomas Moore, 18th century. And I'm going to play them lightly on the piano, and if that's okay, Sylvia?
You're going to sing?
I'll say them.
Okay.
No.
Oh,
anyway,
what is it with
them.
You people? Let's hear a little singing.
Yeah,
maybe before the end of the program.
We may burst into song.
We also have a lot of people hanging on, so I would like to take those calls as well, because I think people have been really stimulated by this.
"Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine. Or leave a kiss but in the cup, and I'll not look for wine. The thirst that from the soul doth rise doth ask a drink divine. But might I of Jove's nectar sup, I would not change for thine." "Believe me, if all those endearing young charms which I gaze on so fondly today were to fade by tomorrow and fleet in my arms like fairy gifts fading away, thou wouldst still be adored. As this moment thou art, let thy loveliness fade as it will. And around the dear ruin, each wish of my heart would entwine itself verdantly still.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
That's
let's find out what our listeners have to say about all of this. Is that all right? We have invited them to call in. And we have a slew of calls coming in from Manhattan from some very patient people. And we will open with Anne. Hi, you're on AM 83.
Oh, the poem and song I wanted to talk about was the one that you just played, Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a beautiful thought and expresses a sentiment that no matter how you change and grow old, you will still be loved.
Yeah.
And that was the one I had in mind before you played it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. It's the expression of constancy in love, isn't it? You remember when Shakespeare said in his sonnet, love is not love which alters when it alterations finds. And that's exactly what Thomas More is saying in this poem, that no matter how the beloved may change, he will always love her.
Yes, I really think that is, you know, one of the most beautiful love poems.
He's saying
thank
love
you so
is
much.
He's saying love is a forever thing.
And thank you for calling us, Anne. Now let's go to Urania. Hi, you're on Senior Edition. Good afternoon, Urania. Are you there, Urania? Oops, sorry. Urania?
Hello.
Yes.
How are you?
I think I just cut off Morton, but I'm sorry, Morton. Yes.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. I just wanted to let you people know that what we are listening now is a banquet for all us Brandeis women who are listening, especially with Sylvia there and her beautiful poems. It's a lesson in itself to all of us, and we're enjoying it very, very much.
Thank you so much, Urania. I think that's wonderful.
We are interrupting our Scrabble game to listen to
you. the greatest tribute you could have.
No greater sacrifice.
It's no sacrifice at all. I'm so very glad we are listening to you. Rose and I are here, and we got telephone calls from other people, and we have been calling also.
Oh,
thank you.
And our number here is 267-WNYC. I'm sorry, I accidentally hung up on Morton. I hope he'll call back. Lotta. Welcome to Senior Edition on AM 83.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying the program, but I have a little poem by an Irishman. It's not quite as sugary as the ones we've had, but I think it's fun. It says, you gave me the key to your heart, my love. Then why did you make me knock? Oh, that was yesterday. Saints above. Last night I changed the lock.
Of course, there are lots of love poems that are very flip like that,
yeah.
And they've been written throughout the history of English poetry.
Mm-hmm.
There have been so many poets. I remember that John Donne said, "For God's sake, hold your tongue and let me love."
And that was in the 16th century. They were still yakking.
70.
Now, Abe, be careful.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
Albert, you're on Senior Edition on AM 83.
Is Abe really going to go off without playing Sylvia?
Oh, you really want me to play Who is Sylvia?
That's right.
Well, it's not really a solo. I promise to come back sometime. If we come back again, I'll do that with Sylvia.
Okay. Good enough.
Thank you, Albert. Morton, sorry that I hung up on you before.
Oh, that's quite all right. I love listening to Sylvia's delivery. Really very, very lovely. Very sensitive, and I can see a great intelligence there.
She
and Abe,
very
I like
well.
Your piano playing.
Oh, wow.
But the reason I called was when you were talking, when Abe was singing I Love You before, which is, Sylvia said this is a song that a kind of maybe inarticulate husband would sing to his wife. I have a favorite kind of inarticulate love song, which is from Roar of the Grease Paint, called My First Love Song. Do you know it at all?
No, I don't, but I'll make it a point to...
Well, I'd like to just recite a few, just the one
sure.
one phrase, paragraph. It's sung by a kind of a Woody Allen type schleppy guy who's sort of inarticulate, and he sees this gorgeous girl go by that he instantly falls in love with, and he sings, "My first love song, this is my first love song, but it takes a poet to make a rhyme. I'm not clever, I could never ever think of phrases worthy of you. Each endeavor I may make to sing your praises may not sound as it should do."
I think that's lovely.
You. Please believe I love you.
Even
and I love the way poets
that.
Do too.
Yes.
Bring my love song and sing my love song to you.
That's wonderful.
All right. Thank you for calling, Morgan.
Okay, bye.
Eugene from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on AM83.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Well, you know, this is the fifth straight Valentine's that my mother stopped smoking, so I turned to 93 WNYC and just wanted to tell everybody about it.
Okay, well, actually, it's 83, but
83,
we don't want to confuse people. I'm saying, wait, my radio says 83.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you for listening to us.
Yeah.
And thank you for calling. Mary, you're on Senior Edition.
Hi. This was written either by a student or a school principal. At school, at work, at play, my thoughts linger fondly on thee, while all the wonders of the nature world join in the chorus of love's symphony.
Mm-hmm. There isn't a principal alive who could write that.
And it was written by a student.
Right. No principal writes that way. Most principals can barely write a note, you know.
Then your courtship is all done with the eyes, not with the words.
Well,
and with the piano,
and
I must
piano.
Add, with the piano.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so for calling us. The next caller's name is important to us here at Senior Edition, as well as to me personally. This is not... Oops, oh, yes, that was terrific. Well, you'll have to guess at what name that was. Actually, it was somebody named Terry. But she hung up. And Chris from the Bronx.
Right.
Hi, you're on the air.
Is this a recording? The poem is called Life Without End. Flourishing in my heart are precious memories. Treasures of a lifetime that you have gifted me. Wealth beyond my worldly needs abounds in all my hours. Mm-hmm. In lofty flight, my heart soars throughout the love was ours each night to land me gently upon love's magic plane. Mm-hmm. In the sweet embrace of joy that tomorrow flies again.
Mm-hmm.
Until tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote that?
Kurt Christie.
Mm-hmm. Did you have that memorized? I'm interested in that. Are you saying this from memory, or are you reading it from a book?
No, I'm saying it from memory.
Yes, I think it's wonderful. I think it's just wonderful that people have poems in their heads and can have all these beautiful words floating around in their heads.
Unfortunately for me, I remember in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's about it.
Oh, you know, violets are red, you know.
No, well, that's not even a poem. That's doggerel. I'm talking about real poetry in 1492.
There are certain phrases in poems that speak of such mature love and such beauty. I mean, what this man just read seemed to indicate some kind of loss, I think, too. And I'm thinking of what Yeats said when he wrote, "That peace, P-E-A-C-E, of course, that peace you make by merely walking in a room." There is that kind of love which is so certain, which is almost like a benediction, I think. And that is one of the characteristics, I think, of mature love, rather than the very young romantic love of teenagers. And
well, both are nice.
They're beautiful. They're both beautiful. And if I may, I'd like to say these lines that Conrad Aiken wrote. He said, "Music I heard with you was more than music. And bread I broke with you was more than bread. Now that I am without you, all is desolate. All that was once so beautiful is dead."
Lenny, how much time? Do we have much
we
time?
We have just a few minutes.
We have just a few minutes. I'd like to ask Sylvia to read something a little lighter. Not that there's anything wrong with being serious. And It's one of my favorite poems of one of my unfavorite authors, Gertrude Stein.
Why an unfavorite?
Yes.
I love Gertrude Stein.
Well, okay, then that...
Have you read Three Lives or the autobiography?
I haven't even been able to get past the
Alice
first
Toklas.
One. Alice
Toklas.
The less he talks, the better. Sylvia, you want to read that?
Yes.
It's utterly uncharacteristically Gertrude Stein.
Well, it's very characteristically Gertrude Stein. We're going to start quarreling here, right?
Yeah, but as good a place as any.
This is called A Very Valentine. Very fine is my Valentine. Very fine and very mine. Very mine is my Valentine. Very mine and very fine. Very fine is my Valentine and mine. Very fine, very mine, and mine is my Valentine.
I can't think of a better way to end this. Oh, you want to play the song as we leave, Abe? Yeah.
Well, there was one song I wanted to play, really, because it's my favorite, and you will see when I play it. We have time. It's worth a play.
Maybe you can take us out musically, as they like to say, and while
all
you
right.
move
and
over to the piano.
Sylvia is going to try a little bit on the vocal cords. All right.
Okay, let me tell people that they've been listening to Abe and Sylvia Lass, who have come to us as a couple for the first time here on Senior Edition, but we hope not the last time on Valentine's Day. And we are going to... Yes, Sylvia, that's probably the best mic, the one with blue in it. Okay, and we are going to go out with... What is the song, Abe?
I'll be with you in apple blossom time.
Terrific.
Be with you... to say, happy the bride, the sun shines today. What a wonderful wedding there will be. What a wonderful day for you and me. Church bells will chime, you will be mine in apple blossom time. Caruso, I'm not, but I love it.